Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the credit crisis when we come back. You know, back in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that's conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper, things like stocks and bonds and Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and debt and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there's no difference in the value of a gold or silver coin when measured against clad coin or currency. And you know that's true when we're dealing with banks and government and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money versus gold. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for you and I to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, our Congress and our politicians didn't take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933 when they did it, that in order to subjugate a free people, that they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights. So if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc. If you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. It doesn't cost you anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's informative. It's entertaining. It's educational, and it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. I want you to do it right now before you forget. All right, the credit crisis. Who's the villain behind this credit crisis anyway? It's rapidly degenerating into the Great Depression of the 21st century. In fact, as I'm watching this credit crisis unfold, it's been going on now for about a year and a half. It began in August. If you want to put a number on this, it's August or a date. August of 2007. It's kind of like if you'd like to put a date on the Great Depression of the 1930s, you start with October. That's October 1929. That's when it started. If you want to put an ending date on the Great Depression of the 1930s, you put December 1941. So that thing lasted for about 10 or 11, 12 years. And when we look back at the Great Depression, we find that it began in October of 1929, and it finally hit the bottom in March of 1933. Today I get letters and emails and telephone calls, and people are always asking, when do you think we're going to reach the bottom? And then my answer is, well, I think it'll probably take about 3.5 years. That's what it took the last time. Although in watching this credit crisis, I am amazed at the rapid descent that we're on. The economy is in free fall worldwide. Now, that didn't occur in 1929. It took 3.5 years. If you take a look at commodity prices in 1930, when they reached the bottom, commodity prices had lost 40% of their value. Well, so far, commodity prices have lost 60% of their value in this round, 60% versus 40. We're beginning now to see numbers when we compare them with the Great Depression of the 1930s, which are now comparable. And this depression is starting off with a rapid deflation of prices, while the government is rapidly inflating the money supply. Now, this is all going to have an outcome. At some point in time, we're going to see hyperinflation, a deflationary hyperinflation. It's called stagflation. It was Harry Schultz that created that term back in the 1970s. It's called stagflation. It's where you have inflation, but you're actually losing money. You got more and more money out there driving the goods off the shelves. At the very same time that these prices are going up, your wages are going down. And that's exactly where you're at right now. Now, so far, if you take a look at how much money has been lost, it dwarfs the recession back in 2000, 2001. In that recession, you lost approximately $7 trillion. $7 trillion is what you lost in your stocks and bonds. So far, you have lost an equivalent amount, $7 trillion, in your stocks and bonds, but you've lost an additional $6 trillion in your house value. Real estate prices have gone down. $6 trillion. Add them together, that's $13 trillion. And we're still in free fall. We not only haven't reached the bottom, we haven't got any clues to where the bottom is. And, of course, your government's doing everything they can to avoid hitting the bottom. They're just printing money and putting it into circulation and bailing out banks and insurance companies, and now they're about to bail out the auto industry. Now, in 1921, when this very same event transpired, we call them a recession, Warren G. Harding, the president, did absolutely nothing. And the economy rapidly descended to the bottom, and the entire affair was over in about 18 months, 1921, 1922, which then set the stage for the recovery through the Roaring Twenties. So if we look at history, the more you interfere, and this is what government's doing, they're interfering now, so they're doing everything they can to hold prices up. Well, that's like trying to keep the Titanic from sinking by establishing a bucket brigade. And so we're bailing water out of the Titanic, which makes all the sense in the world. I mean, you've got a big hole down the side of the ship, and it's taking on water. And so you want to pump this water out just as rapidly as possible. And so every time you throw a five-gallon bucket of water over the railing, it's a step in the right direction. Now, the problem that we have here is that for every bucket that you're throwing over, there's three more coming in. And this is where the monetary authorities are. For every dollar that you're putting out there in new money, you're depreciating the value of the money that's already in circulation. And it takes about 18 months for this money to get into the circulation of the economy. So the money that's being put in today isn't going to have any effect for 18 months. And by the time this thing runs for 18 months, there isn't any hope of stopping it. So the solution isn't in putting more money into the equation. The solution is to get to the bottom as rapidly as possible by doing absolutely nothing. You let AIG collapse. You let the auto industry collapse. You let all the banks collapse. They won't all collapse, but you let those that are the weakest collapse. This will send prices straight down to the bottom as rapidly as possible, which is where the Titanic is going anyway. The American economy is not salvageable, and it's going into total collapse. And the sooner you get to the bottom, then the sooner you can start going back up again. And you can't start going back up until you first get to the bottom, and your government's doing everything that they can to keep you from reaching the bottom. So that's going to drag this whole process out for years and years and years, and that's what happened back the last time. If you want to know how to get through a depression rapidly, you go back to the history of 1921-22. It collapses, goes to the bottom, and then you've only got one way to go is up. You start with 1929. The Hoover people got right in there with a number of processes. It was all too little too late. And then when Roosevelt came in 33, he exacerbated those processes. He just went on, you know, with all kinds of experiments. And it did absolutely nothing. Nothing. From 33, this is March of 33, when it hit the bottom, until September of 37, the economy stayed right exactly where it was, on the bottom. You know, they had a few fuel spikes and dips, but essentially from March of 33 to September of 37, nothing was accomplished. You could point to September of 37 and say, okay, from 37 on, we began to come out of the depression, because it is true that the economy was growing. That is, slowly but surely, it was growing from 37 to December of 41. But it was very slow. I mean, for practical purposes, we were still in the depression until World War II ended it. December 7th, 1941, that ended the depression. Because now everybody went to work. They either went to work in the Army for $69 a month, or they went to work in the defense industry, providing the goods and services to supply that war effort, which was part of the reason for this war in Iraq. We wanted to go steal their oil, but in addition to that, we needed a boost to the economy. And war is a great boost to the economy. And out of these depressions always follows war. At least that's always been the example in past history. So if you take a look at where we're at today, you can expect World War III as the ultimate end of where we are today. Now, Franklin Sanders wrote a great article here on who is the villain. And it's in the October, in the 2008 issue, Who is the Villain? So I thought I would cover Franklin Sanders' perspective. And there's three villains involved here. So let me tell you what the three causes or the three villains are. Debt, interest, and paper money. If you want to know why we have a credit crisis, it's debt, interest, or usury, and paper money. And Franklin puts his finger right on the pulse of it here, and he says, he's got a little different take on it. He says it's inflation. Inflation, paper money. And the debt and the interest are exacerbating contributors, but this is where we're going. Now, in the Bible, if you went to the Scripture, you would find that paper money is prohibited, usury is prohibited, and debt is prohibited. So if we didn't practice debt, usury, and paper money, we wouldn't have an economic crisis. But we would have to be practicing something else. We would have to be practicing the 15 economic laws of the scripture if we wanted to avoid these peaks and valleys. Now, that's not going to happen, and I'm not suggesting now that you run out here and get evangelistic zeal and get religion, go to church, or do something crazy like that. But I just wanted to point out that the Gordon Law School this year, 2008, so far has made more profit than Ford, Chrysler, and General Motors combined. And I practice the Ten Commandment model here. And we have discovered that by practicing the 15 economic laws of the Bible, which is founded upon the Ten Commandment model, you'll do better. You'll make more money, make more profit, live better, and be happier, and everything goes along better. The opposite to that are the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto call for, number two, this is the second plank, a heavy progressive income tax. Number five, a central bank. And number eight, Social Security or insurance. Now, if you want to practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But I think you should be informed that by doing that, you're going to have a credit crisis. You're going to have a Great Depression. You're going to have hyperinflation. You're going to lose your job, lose your house, lose your car, and have all kinds of financial trouble. It's always been the history of it in the past. That's what we see going on today. And my prediction would be if you keep practicing that, that's what you're going to have in the future. The good news is you can make a change anytime you want. So anytime you want to leave communism and go to the Ten Commandments, you can. And you'll get an immediate benefit from it. And as we progress along, they show you how to make money. Because these depressions, these economic crises that you see going on, just open up a great opportunity. Great fortunes were made in the last Great Depression, and great fortunes are going to be made in this depression. And you can make money in depression. You just don't make it the same way that you make it when you have an inflationary period like we've been going through since World War II. We've had these inflationary periods punctuated with recessions. And so these inflationary periods punctuated by inflations make a lot of money. I don't deny that. People have made lots of money, mainly people in stocks and bonds and brokerage houses, banks, insurance companies, big corporations. They've just made a ton of money. They're just wallowing in the stuff. That's why you see that Bank of America builds big office towers in San Francisco and why Citicorp, you know, and J.P. Morgan, you know, have big buildings in New York City. They make tons of money. Now, for the average Joe Sixpack out here, we're not doing very well. And we'll talk a little more about that as we progress along. But Franklin Sanders here in the October issue of The Money Changer begins by asking, well, who is the villain? Who has caused the worst financial crisis in human history? By one estimate, over the last year, stock market investors through pension funds, college savings plans, IRAs, 401ks, and mutual funds have lost $8.3 trillion. The losers are ready for a lynching and hungry for a guest of honor, or maybe a guest of dishonor. And like parrots, the voices on all sides denounce the cause as greed and fear. Greedy capitalists, greedy mortgage brokers, greedy real estate brokers, greedy home buyers, greedy politicians, fearful banks, and of course from the we did it to ourselves school of greedy and fearful, the public itself. Well, let's take a look at this in greater detail. The villain isn't greed. It's not even fear, and all that's a red herring. It's a false track of hogwash, pure and simple, laid to direct your suspicion and your vengeance away from the real villain. The villain behind the current crisis is, and you should write this down because you won't hear it from Washington, Wall Street, or the media. It is the Federal Reserve, or you're not going to hear it from the Federal Reserve. No, I don't mean any single Federal Reserve official like Alan Greenspan or Ben Bernanke, even though they contribute their parts as agents of the real villain. I mean that the cause of the crisis is the Federal Reserve System itself. Did you write that down? It's the Federal Reserve System. It's the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. It is that fifth plank which calls for a central bank. That's the cause of our problem. Now, once you get the cause clear, the villain becomes clear. The cause is inflation, but hardly anyone understands what this thing called inflation is. Inflation is not rising prices. It is the expansion of the money supply. And who and only who can inflate the U.S. money supply? It's the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve, by itself and working through its agents, the fractional reserve banks, which is to say all the banks in our nation. Now, there's about 9,000 of these banks here in the country. And these 9,000 banks belong to an organization called the Federal Reserve. This is the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto. It's exactly the opposite to the Ten Commandments. It's the exact antithesis of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36, which says, in effect, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. It's against the law for us to deal in paper money. Our instruction from our Creator was to deal in gold and silver coin. Now, we woke up one day and said, well, we don't think God really knows what the hell he's talking about, and so therefore we're going to cut a fat hog in the back here and create a federal reserve system. We call it the Federal Reserve System. We're going to create a central bank over here like all the nations around us, and we did. That was back in 1913. We got a Great Depression out of it in the 1930s. And we didn't change our tune in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. We went right on. And now we have exacerbated the problem. And this depression coming on us now should be a James Dandy Wallapalooza. This thing ought to dwarf the last one. And that's because the fundamentals that we're facing today are so much worse than they were in the 1930s. For instance, if you just take a look at debt. See, back in 1930, our national government, I think, had about a $2 billion debt. It wasn't very much. And today we got a $10 trillion debt, and that's just what they admit to. It's actually $100 trillion, but they admit to 10 of it. So compare $2 billion with $10 trillion. That's number one. Number two, in 1930, we still had our gold and silver coin. We had just weights and balances. Today we don't. We have a fiat currency. And then take a look at the entrenchment of the banking system. I mean, we are the feudal serfs of the Federal Reserve banking system, like it or lump it. And they're the charge here. They're the guys that want to create this new world order. So, you know, we're just captives of the Federal Reserve is what it boils down to. Now, what I would suggest is that we consider breaking away from that. Now, I don't think that the people of America want to do that. I don't think they want to give up Social Security, the income tax, or the Federal Reserve Bank. But if you want to, you could. You can do this as an individual or as a family. I mean, you don't have to stay in the program, but if you stay in the program, well, then you're part of the economy, and the economy is in the process of collapse. So some years back, I took a look at this, and I said, you know, I don't think this is a very good program. I think I need to get out of Social Security, get out of the income tax, get out of the national economy, and get back into gold and silver coin, just weights and balances, get out of debt, and stop practicing usury. And I did, and it paid off quite handsomely. To give you that illustration again, the Gordon Law School this year, 2008, has a higher profit margin than General Motors, Ford, and Chrysler combined. And I don't have 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 employees either. They're just me and my wife and my boy. Now, Sanders points out, he said, I might actually boil my indictment down further and call the villain fiat money. And I'm going to underline that, fiat money. That's paper money. That paper money now, remember, is prohibited in Deuteronomy. You might write this down. Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16, and Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Paper money is strictly prohibited by the creator of the universe. He said, don't do that. Now, of course, we're smarter than God, so we said, no, we're going to have a central bank, and we're going to have paper money. Well, okay. And if you do that, you're going to have a credit crisis, a deflation, a depression. You're going to have hyperinflation. You're going to have all of the end results that come from paper money. Now, Franklin Sanders simply put it out here. He said, fiat money, because the Federal Reserve is merely the ministry of fiat money in the American case. And like every other fiat money system, this present Federal Reserve-run America, the one follows the same iron law of evolution. And that is, success begets success, and excess begets death. Success begets excess, and excess begets death. Every fiat money system in history follows that exact pattern. Do not, by my indictment of the Federal Reserve System, assume that I am pointing at some mere abstraction. No real people put that system in place. Real people profit enormously from it, and real people are behind it today. Understand that. There are real people that have put the Federal Reserve System in place. And there are real people out there who profit enormously from that Federal Reserve System. And there are real, honest-to-God, live people out there behind the Federal Reserve System today. It makes tons of money for these people, but it doesn't make anything for you and me. It's good for Bank of America and Citicorp and IBM and Walmart, but it's not good for Joe Sixpack and George Gordon. And that's why I decided, now I think I'll go back to doing what we were doing when we were successful. Let me point this out to you. The golden era of America was from 1865 to 1900. The living standards of Americans grew by more than 4% a year for that 35-year period. In fact, the period actually goes a little longer than that. We could move it up to 1910. But our living standards moved by 4% a year. We had gold and silver coin. And our gross domestic product grew at a faster rate, and we built more infrastructure, and we prospered more under gold and silver than we ever have under paper money. So in 1913, we were sold this paper money idea that it's going to be good for you, and we bought into it. Now, our creator, our God, told us don't do that. That's going to be a mistake, but, you know, here again, you know, people don't listen. Sure as hell don't listen to God, you know. So Sanders goes on, he says, now today the system's inevitable excess has brought on another crisis of death, and our leaders are prescribing as the proper cure the same poison that brought death, more inflation and more government intervention. So get this clear in your head once and for all, and don't doubt it. All of the inflation and government economic interventions will only worsen the depression. The more intervention that you put into the economy, then the longer it's going to last and the worse it's going to be. Now, you can bet that this depression is going to last for 10 years or more, and that it's going to be worse than the 1930s, because we're going to go back and we're going to do just exactly what we did in the 1930s, which caused the last long, drawn-out depression. Now, that's where great economic opportunity exists, because now you know what your government's going to do, so now you know what to do to counteract it. See how simple that is? As the Magamba would say, hey, this investing is easy. Now, instead of a relatively short, sharp correction of abundant and well-earned bankruptcies, the Federal Reserve and the government will keep the living dead on life support and then stretch the depression out a decade or more, blasting far more lives and wasting far more capital than it would ever have done if it was just left alone. Now, here's what happens. If you do absolutely nothing, there will be a swift, sudden depression. I mean, it will be god-awful, but it's like getting a whipping. You know, the whipping itself isn't near as bad as the anticipation leading up to it. At least that was always my experience. The sooner you get it over with, the better. Then you can get on with life. But as long as that whipping's hanging over you, which is where this Great Depression of the 21st century is, it's just hanging on to us. Just like, it's like dog poop on your shoe, you know, you just can't shake it off. And the powers that be that make their money off of inflation don't want it to die, and so they're just going to work their hearts out trying to reinflate the economy, which was the cause of our problem to start with. It was this inflation. So they're going to work their hearts out, and they're going to try to reinflate it. And what you'll get here is a hyperinflation, which is what they've got over in Zimbabwe. So you got to watch the BBC at night. Almost every week they'll have a story on Zimbabwe. That's the old Rhodesia. And then this guy Mugabe over there, who was their champion, who came in and freed them from all of that oppressive white rule. Now, I want to point out to you that the people that live in Zimbabwe, the majority of them are black. And these black people over there were ruled over by a minority of whites. Now, this minority of whites had created an economy in Rhodesia in 1980, which benefited everybody. You know, everybody was working, and it was a first world industrial nation exporting food. And their economy was just about equal to the United States. Not as high as, but you know, just about. And their dollar in 1980 was equal to the dollar, the U.S. dollar. All right, now, they've, since 1980, in 28 years, they have run their country right into the ground, 28 years. Now they've got cholera, and then they've got hyperinflation, and there's no goods on the shelf. And their water system doesn't work, and their electric system doesn't work. It is a failed state. And they've been practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And that's the results that they got. So if you want the same thing here in America, you just follow that Rhodesian example, and that's precisely what we're doing here. We're following the Rhodesian example, and we're going to get the same result. History repeats itself because we keep doing the same things over and over again, expecting a different result. So you can forget about deflation. Now, you're having a little bit of deflation right now. This is an anomaly. Now, voices on all sides are raising the specter of deflation. The global collapse of debt will cause the money supply to collapse. You can forget that. Although debt certainly is collapsing around the globe, the crisis will not cause a true deflation, for example, a decrease in the money supply. And why is that? And that's because the greatest fear of central bankers is deflation. They fought it unsuccessfully between 1932 and 1941. And they know that they cannot beat it once it takes hold. And why is that? Well, that's because once the massive debt which the central bankers have created through inflation begins collapsing in a self-reinforcing cycle or chain reaction, that is, one debtor fails, causing his creators to fail, and so on up the line. It destroys both morale and the monetary base to loan more. So why is it that this is important? It's important because in this money system today, all money is borrowed into existence. Money is borrowed into existence. All right, now with that in mind, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters now to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations do not mean, you know, these recommendations that we give, that doesn't mean that the authors or the publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, it could be religious or economic, they may be sectarian or racial or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views or the beliefs or opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can go to georgegordon.com, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, with that in mind, let's go back here and we're taking a look here at the credit crisis and the publication called The Money Changer. If you'd like to get a copy of The Money Changer, we're reviewing the October issue, that is the October 2008 Money Changer, and you can get a copy by calling them and asking for it. The number to call is 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226, and tell them you heard about it here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and you'd like to have a copy of Who is the Villain? You know, if you can't identify what the problem is, you can't solve it. Now, this credit crisis, this monetary crisis, I don't see it as a crisis at all. I see it as a great opportunity to make money. This is a great business opportunity. Now, I'm sorry to hear that a lot of you people are unemployed and that you're losing your houses and losing your cars and losing your jobs, but you people all brought that on yourselves. Now, I hate to be crude, you know, and cruel and heartless and so on. You practiced debt, and you practiced interest and usury, and you practiced unjust weights and balances. And the results that you're receiving today are the natural consequences of debt, interest, and paper money. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, as soon as you leave debt, interest, and paper money out of your financial equation, you can begin to make money and you can begin to make profit and gain and just have a great time. And we teach you how to do that in our business school, which is the thrust of the law school. It's to simply compare what we're doing and then taking a look at the cause and effect relationship. Now, debt, usury, and paper money comes from the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Gold and silver coin, free and clear, no interest, comes from the 10 commandments. There's two economic models out here in planet Earth, or on planet Earth. There's two economic models. When we practiced the 10 commandment model between 1865 and 1900 or 1910, we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world. In 1913, we introduced paper money. Then we introduced the income tax. And then we introduced this thing of debt and usury. And as a result of that, we have now run its course. About 90 years later, it's run its course. And there's a great incentive to want to do this. I don't deny it. Credit cards are wonderful. I don't deny it. Paper money is just terrific. Bank accounts and checking accounts are very convenient. But there's an ultimate end to it. And this ultimate end is a hyperinflationary depression. That's what's always happened in the past. Looking back thousands of years, it's always happened in the past. And that's what's happening to us right now, and there isn't any reason to believe that it isn't what's going to happen in the future. And Franklin Sanders here, the Money Changer, is one of these conservative economists who says, you know, the John Maynard Keynes formula for wealth and prosperity was a failure. It never was a winning argument. It never was a winning formula, and furthermore, it was doomed to failure the day it was instituted. It's a Ponzi scheme is what it is. Now, you can forget about deflation now because the powers that be are not going to allow it. So we're not going to have a deflation. Now, you're seeing what is called a deflation right now, and the powers that be are printing money like you can't believe. You're going to have a Zimbabwe-type hyperinflation. The decrease in prices that you see right now today are the hedge funds deleveraging, and it's the desperation of the banks and everybody else out there. And so they're selling everything that they can sell to inject liquidity onto their balance sheet. This is a temporary phenomenon. It's about to come to an end. They're calling it deflation. It's a misnomer. It's a sell-off is what it is. So take advantage of it. You know, when gasoline is down to $2 a gallon or a dollar, they're talking about a dollar a gallon gas. That's when you want to fill up your 1,000-gallon tank with diesel, and when you want to fill up your gas tank, your 300-gallon gas tank, you know, because the price of gas is going to go up to $4 a gallon again, and then to 8, 16, 24, and 32. And that's where you're headed. And your wages are going down. You're going to have more unemployment, and there's going to be a race to the bottom. You're going to have lower and lower wages and higher prices. That's what's coming. So why is all of this so important? Well, it's because in this system, all money is borrowed into existence. And the parable of the cards is the story that explains it. We'll talk about this parable of the cards here in a minute. Now, debt, remember, debt is the debtor's liability, but the lender's asset. Double entry bookkeeping. Banks loan money based upon how much the law allows them to loan against their balance sheet, that is called their assets. When their assets, like mortgages, become worthless, their balance sheet shrinks, pinching their power to loan. And it gets even worse. Suppose $1 million is borrowed into existence in 1 year at 10% interest. At the end of the year, $100,000 must be paid in interest. And if it's not borrowed into existence, many borrowers will go bankrupt. Therefore, the debt and the money supply must be constantly expanded, because if they stop growing the economy, then debtors go bankrupt, shrinking the money supply in a self-reinforcing cycle. And I've never been able to forget the quiet words of one central banker who received his collegiate training in the 1932 to 1942 era. He said, "Oh, when that deflation takes hold, there's nothing you can do to stop it." Now, that is the unspoken but ever-present presupposition of every central banker and their masters and the people who control the system. Therefore, for every dollar destroyed, they will create two more. That's what they're doing today. And that will explain to you why the decades since the Great Depression have seen the U.S. government build so many automatic circuit breakers into the system to stop deflation before it ever gets started. So they have created welfare, unemployment insurance, Full Employment Act of 1948, regulations and regulations, and then more regulations, and plenty of government spending, always. And, of course, the Federal Reserve controlling the economy through monetary policy and interest rates. And all of these jury rigs gin along constantly to make the inflation run and to ward off the deflation. And so far it's worked. And I don't deny it. They've been able to make this thing go now from the end of World War II until 2007. That's August of 2007. Now it's coming unraveled. And that's because of geometric progression. You can only double so many times. And then pretty soon it becomes unsustainable. And that's where we're at. It's unsustainable. Like any Ponzi scheme, it gets to the point where it becomes unsustainable and it collapses. Now, the sooner you get this collapse out of the way, like a whipping, as I mentioned earlier, then the better it is, because then you can get back to getting back to life again. Now, if you don't do that, well, that's fine. And they're not going to. That's okay, too. But it's going to drag the whole process out 10 or 15 years. So do you want to get it over with, or did you want to get one swat a day? I mean, you know, we're going to get 10 or 15 swats. You want to get them all together and let's get it over with and get on with life, or do you want to get one a day for the next 15 days? And so now the people want the government to do something. And so they're all out here clamoring, writing letters to their senators and representatives, saying, "Do something, do something." And that's because we don't want the whipping. But that isn't going to stop it. We don't want the Titanic to sink, but there's no saving it. We don't want the American economy to collapse, but there's nothing you're going to do to prevent it. Now, you can stretch it out, and you can stretch out the economic consequences for 10 or 15 years, or you can get it over with like we did in 1921 in a short, swift descent. Now, that isn't going to happen, so then what we're going to see then is going to be a long, drawn-out event, and in this long, drawn-out event, there's going to be economic opportunities, and those of us that are the sharks are going to be circling around taking advantage of those economic opportunities, and then the rest of you people are going to say, "Well, look at that guy Gordon over there taking advantage of us." I'm not going to do anything that's illegal or unlawful, but you know, when you can't make your house payments, the bank's going to come take it away from you, and then they're going to put it up for auction, and then I'm going to come in and buy your house for 10 cents on the dollar, and then I'm going to sell your house for 20 cents on the dollar and make a profit, and you're just going to be just incensed that I'm going to do that. That's what the Ten Commandment model prescribed. It's profitability. And the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto prescribe inflation, then deflation, and then economic ruin, and that's where we're all headed. So it's time to start taking stock of it. Now, Franklin Sanders here hit the nail on the head. He said, "Your problem is with the Federal Reserve. The sooner you get out of paper money and into gold and silver, the better it'll be for you." Just that simple. Now, politics, not economics, is what's driving all of this. This is a political problem. It's not economics at all. Economics would straighten itself out. So what we're going to do is we're going to add the political dimension to our economy, and that's where the government gets into it. And all they do is screw it up. Since monetary creation is the heart and soul of their political control, it must not be allowed to spin out of control into a deflation. And that truly would create a crisis that might overthrow the entire system. Therefore, the whole political will of everyone in power, bankers, central bankers, politicians, corporate executives will all be slammed into gear to fight a deflation. Ben Bernanke, with his November 2002 speech about fighting deflation by the printing press and throwing money out of helicopters, completely understands this. The guy's no dummy. His academic work focused on the Great Depression of the 1930s, and it's for these reasons that I contend that the outcome here, driven as it is by political and not by economic forces, will be inflationary. And I want to add my little 2 cents worth there. I think Sanders is exactly correct. I think he's hit the nail right on the head here. We're going into an inflationary period. All right, so now what that tells you is you want to get out of dollars and you want to get out of debt. You want to stop practicing usury and interest. This is not the time to be buying. This is the time to be conserving your liquidity. The time to have increased your liquidity was in 2005. That's when you should have sold all of your real estate. So every day somebody calls me and says, well, I didn't sell my real estate. Well, okay, now you're stuck with it. You're not going to sell it today because nobody wants to buy it. Now people are calling in, they're saying, well, I'm in debt and I can't make my payments. Well, then you're going to lose the asset, bottom line. Now let's suppose that you're losing your assets and that there's no salvation. Just sit back and relax. Let me show you something. You're only 36 months away from having $100,000 in gold coin buried in Holmgren. 36 months. That's what it takes. Once you get to zero COD. Zero COD. That means you're out of debt. And most of you people aren't out of debt. So the very first thing we have to do is to get you up out of that hole to zero COD. That's the first thing I tell a student when he walks in the door. So the first thing we've got to do for you is to get you out of that hole that you're buried in. As long as you're in debt, you cannot make money. Now, if you think you can make money with debt, get after it. That's what you've been sold now for the last 75 years, but I haven't seen any examples of it. I've seen a lot of people make claims that they were making money with debt and leverage, but that isn't what ultimately happens at the end of the game. You actually end up with the old maid to lose. Let me give you a quick example. Go back to 1960, investing for the long haul. You go back to 1960, and let's take $10,000 and invest it in the Dow Jones Industrial Average when it was at about 1,000. And you could have ridden that up to about 11,000 in 2001. From 1,000 to 11,000 on the Dow. And in dollar terms, your investment would have moved from $10,000 to $70,000 and some change. So you made seven times your amount. You could have sold out in 2000 and collected $70,000. And you'd say, wow, what a profit I made. And that's the problem with most of you people. You know, you go to school, and you get books, and you become educated, and they give you a degree. The truth of the matter is you lost 38%. That's what your net loss is. Here's why you lost it. And that's because of inflation. Remember that paper money? The unjust weights and balances that violate Leviticus 19, 35, and 36, Deuteronomy 25, 13 through 16. Okay. Inflation at the very same period of time was running at 4.7%. So your net profit at the end of this 30-year period was 0.3%. But you had to pay a capital gain tax, 28%, on the $70,000 profit, remember? So when you calculate your 28% tax, you didn't pay the 28% tax on the 0.3%. You paid the 28% tax on the full 5% gain. So you take your $10,000 off and you got a $60,000 gain, so you're going to pay 28% of the $60,000 at the very same time that you lost 4.7% of your purchasing power. There have been no real increases in wages since 1973. It is true that in 1973 you were making $4 an hour. And it is true that today you're making $16 an hour, so you're making four times as much money. But at the very same time, inflation has been going at the rate of 4.7% a year, which now leaves you with a deficit or a net loss. So if you invest in stocks in the year 1960 and kept them until the year 2000, your net loss was $3,800 out of your $10,000. Your money has lost purchasing power 50% between 1980 and 2000, and it lost another 30% of its purchasing power between 2000 and 2007. You people are keeping track of your money in nominal form, that is, in the dollars that I have in my pocket, or the dollars per hour that I'm earning, and not in the purchasing power. Now, let me show you a little trick here. The price of gasoline in 1950 was 27.3 cents per gallon, rounded off to 30 cents a gallon. And your wages in 1950 were $1.75 an hour. This is rounded off to $2 an hour, or $1.80. Now, divide 30 cents into $1.80, 30, 60, 90, 120, 150, 180. So you work 1 hour and you get 6 gallons of gas. 1950, you work 1 hour, you get 6 gallons of gas. Okay. Now let's take a look at wages. Wages are $17.58 an hour. So they take 17.58 cents an hour. That's what you're averaging right now. And let's divide that by $4 a gallon, and you get 4.3 gallons of gas. See where you're headed? You're making you know, 8 times more money, but you're getting less for it. Now that's where reality's at. Now watch this. As the price of oil goes down in this temporary inflation, you see that the price of gas has gone down to $2 a gallon. Now you're getting the same $17.58 divided by 2, which means that you're getting 9 gallons of gas. Well, that's more than the 6 gallons you were getting back in 1950. And that's where inflation really pays off. And that's what makes inflation so good. It really makes us want to get involved with more inflation. Bottom line to that inflation, though, boys and girls, is that there's an ultimate end in a collapse. And that's where you're at today. You're in the collapse. And when that happens, then you lose your house, and then you lose your car, then you lose your job, then you lose. Now, as I said, what you need to do is to get back to zero COD, and there's a number of ways to do that. And once we get back to zero COD, then we can get off of usury and interest, then we can get off of the unjust weights and balances, and we can get off of the debt. Now we can go into starting to make some money. And that's where the money's at. It's in hard goods. It's in wheat, corn, beans, honey, oil, gold, silver. It's in trade. It's in real property. Property is where you want to be. Rather than income, we want to increase. Rather than profit, we want property. And so our powers that be have sold us. They've sold us a bill of goods. They've led us down the primrose path. Yeah, I'm running out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here. We'll pick it up right there with Franklin Sanders. Remember, Franklin Sanders here is called the Money Changer. The number is 888-218-2926. That's the Money Changer. You're looking for the October 2008 issue. Let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. And remind you that we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.